Christina Menenti with your worldwide news update. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said a Russian drone with a high explosive warhead struck the protective shell of the Chernobyl nuclear reactor on Friday. AP correspondent Karen Chemas reports.
Footage shared by the State Emergency Service of Ukraine showed the moment of the impact and the damage to the confinement, including interiors of the shell being hosed down with water following the strike. Zelensky wrote on his social media page that the strike damaged the structure and started a fire which has been put out. The International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed the information, saying that their team on site heard an explosion coming from the confinement. The new safe confinement, as it is known, was built in 2016 with European and US assistance to safeguard the remains of the fourth reactor of the power plant, which was destroyed during the Chernobyl disaster in 1986. I'm Karen Chamas.
The chief of the International Atomic Energy Agency says there was no radiation released following the drone attack. In his keynote address to the Munich Security Conference, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance lambasted the European Union for its regulation of hate speech and misinformation, which he said amounted to censorship.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within.
Vance's speech came at a time of intense concern and uncertainty over the Trump administration's foreign policy. Vance only briefly referred to Ukraine, saying he hoped a quote-unquote reasonable settlement could be reached. However, British Foreign Secretary David Lammy said he is encouraged by his meeting with Vance.
There was an agreement that Zelensky and the Ukrainians have to be part of that negotiated deal.
Vance is expected to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky later on Friday. This is VOA News. Speaking to reporters at the Munich Security Conference, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he believes unless he is stopped in Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin will attack NATO countries.
I think, Twama, that he's preparing the war against NATO countries next year. And I think so. But I don't know, you know, I don't have 100, and God bless, we will stop this crazy guy, and we will not have war, any war in the world, in Europe, but you will not stop him just to say, yes, he said it, we will stop.
At the same news conference, Zelensky said he would be willing to talk with the Russians if Ukraine, the U.S., and other Western allies reached a common position on how to end the three-year war. Hamas says it will release the next group of three Israeli hostages as planned on Saturday. More from VOA's Tommy McNeil.
The move would pave the way toward resolving a major dispute over the ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Hamas has threatened to delay the next release of Israeli hostages, accusing Israel of failing to meet its obligations to allow in tents and shelters, among other alleged violations of the truce. Israel has said it will resume fighting Hamas if the hostages are not freed, but did not immediately comment on the statement by the militant group. The announcement by Hamas should allow the ceasefire to continue for now, though its long-term viability remains in doubt. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Hamas identified the hostages to be released as Russian-Israeli Alexandra Sasha Truvanov, Argentine-Israeli Ayer Horn, and U.S.-Israeli Sagui Dekelchen. Authorities say an Afghan national has admitted to purposefully driving into a crowd in the German city of Munich. At least 36 people, including a child, were hurt on Thursday when the 24-year-old Afghan, who arrived in Germany as an unaccompanied minor asylum seeker in 2016 and lived in Munich on a work permit, was arrested after driving his Mini Cooper into the back of a labor union demonstration in the Bavarian city on Thursday. Pope Francis has been hospitalized in Rome's Gemelli Polyclinic to continue treatment for bronchitis and undergo tests. Since being diagnosed with bronchitis on February 6, the 88-year-old Pope has continued his activities and seeing audiences indoors at Casa Santa Marta, the Vatican residence where he lives, and made a public appearance on Sunday. Francis has long battled health problems, including long bouts of bronchitis. He uses a walker or cane when moving around his apartment and recently fell twice, hurting his arm and chin. The pontiff will skip several planned public events over the next 3 days, the Vatican said, after he reportedly struggled to speak during one of his meetings in the morning. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com, 24 hours a day. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's taking place at the time of global turbulence, at the time of multipolarity that is not clearly defined. It's taking place when in the White House you have somebody who advocates total different approaches.
That's South African international relations expert Kingsley Makubila on how the African Union summit this weekend will be different from other similar meetings. Details coming up. Also, a judge orders the White House to temporarily lift a funding freeze that shut U.S. aid and development work worldwide. And we look at Black History Month in the United States. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti in Eastern DRC confirms to me M23 rebels seizing a second airport in the region following a days-long advance towards the Kavumu Airport, which serves South Kivu province.
Yes, exactly. I confirm that the M23 has taken today the airport of Kavumu, the important airport in the South Kivu province, which is at 37 kilometers west of the city of Bukavu. So for now, the city of Bukavu doesn't have any airport, and it's the same for the DRC armed forces, because they were also using that airport to reinforce troops in the region.
M23 rebels are continuing their march in eastern Congo. I asked about their long-term goal.
We are seeing that rebels are not getting any resistance from FRDC. As you may know, Goma had a lot of military equipment which were taken by M23, and for now they are using it against FRDC. The goal is still something which only M23 know. It seems that their goal is being changed day after day. The last time when I talked to Colonel Nanga, the coordinator of AFC, the alliance which leads the M23 and other groups, according to them, the goal is now to chase out Tshisekedi. They will march till Kinshasa.
And lastly, I asked Jafar to describe the humanitarian catastrophe looming in the eastern DRC as M23 rebels push south.
There is no any NGO which can operate in that zone. The road is still closed and the lake is also closed. So there is no link from Goma, which is the hub of the eastern Congo, to the other parts of the eastern Congo. So people who are in the other side are not in communication with peoples in the other side. And also NGOs cannot operate as the roads and the lake are still closed by M23. And this is one of the biggest situations. Kavumu, the zone which were attacked today by rebels and have been taken, was an epidemic zone, because there is Mpox outbreak in that zone. I was there 3 months ago with hundreds of cases of people affected by Mpox. So for now, these people fled in the community. They will also contaminate many other people. So the Mpox outbreak will be uncontrollable very soon, as many people will get infected by the patient who fled the hospitals.
That was reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti speaking from the Eastern DRC. The African Union summit is getting started in Addis Ababa, with the 55-nation organization facing multiple challenges. AU officials tell VOA the escalating conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and drastic cuts in humanitarian aid from the United States will top the agenda. Darren Taylor reports.
South African international relations expert Kingsley Makubela says the Addis Ababa meeting is set to be very tense because there are great divisions between members about how to approach various crises.
This summit is going to be different from other summits. It's taking place at the time of global turbulence, at the time of multipolarity that is not clearly defined. It's taking place when in the White House you have somebody who advocates total different approaches, who's declared economic war with Europe, China, and everyone else, and Africa included in that equation.
U.S. President Donald Trump has frozen most foreign aid for 90 days, throwing into question billions of dollars of assistance for Africa. The U.S. leader says it's part of his America First agenda and that it's time for others to provide large-scale developmental assistance globally and for Africa to be less dependent on foreign help. Makubela says the AU needs to come up with plans to fill the gaps left by the sudden lack of U.S. funding. Otherwise, many Africans could die from starvation and infectious diseases. Then there's the fighting in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where M23 rebels have beaten back Congolese troops and forces from South Africa, Tanzania, and Malawi. Speaking at a pre-summit event hosted by the South African Institute of International Affairs in Johannesburg, Congolese political analyst Hubert Kabasu said it's a severe blow to the AU's credibility that it has been unable to end decades of conflict in the DRC. According to the United Nations and the Kinshasa government, Rwanda is backing the rebels. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says his troops are in eastern DRC only to protect Rwanda's borders and accuses Kinshasa of sheltering a Rwandan rebel group that wants to oust his government. Kabasu says the AU must decide what to do about Kigali's involvement in the war and DRC President Felix Tshisekedi's unwillingness to speak with M23 leaders.
If you look at it from the perspective of Kinshasa, they say the international community is not activating sanctions robust enough to stop Rwanda and other factions. And communist politicians and civil society in Kinshasa, on the contrary, they say that international community, including also SADC and EAC, are not exerting sufficient pressure on Kinshasa for Kinshasa to accept dialogue and also for Kinshasa regime to curtail predatory politics, erratic politics, repression, rampant murders of politicians.
So says the analyst, the AU must find solutions to a multidimensional crisis in eastern DRC. Otherwise, he says, it could easily become a war involving multiple countries. Recently elected AU Commissioner Lerato Matabohe of South Africa tells VOA conflicts won't end unless there's sustained Africa-driven development on the continent.
My number one priority will be to address the issue of energy poverty that is on our continent. We have 600 million Africans that have zero access to electricity as we speak. We are talking about a continent that only has 25% of broadband access. We are talking about a continent that has fragmented infrastructure. We are unable to trade with one another. We've got 18% intra-Africa trade levels. How do we make sure that we crowd in the resources that we need to move our infrastructure forward? We've got the right plans. We've got the program for infrastructure development.
But Makubela says the AU's always been good at making plans. Implementation, however, is where its weakness lies. The heads of government from the AU states arrive in Addis Ababa today, ahead of the summit sessions on Saturday and Sunday. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A spokesman says Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi will not attend the summit and that the Prime Minister will represent the country. A federal judge yesterday ordered the Trump administration to temporarily lift a funding freeze that has shut down U.S. aid and development work worldwide. The court cited the damage the sudden shutdown has done to the nonprofits and other organizations that help carry out U.S. assistance overseas. In January, President Donald Trump imposed a 90-day freeze on most aid spending to allow time to review all programs to ensure they serve national interests. It was the second major setback in the effort to dismantle the six-decade-old U.S. Agency for International Development, which Trump and ally Elon Musk say is out of line with Trump's agenda. The funding cutoff has left contractors, farmers, and suppliers in the U.S. and around the world without hundreds of millions of dollars in pay for work already done and forced layoffs among those enterprises.
On his first day in office, U.S. President Donald Trump.
The Trump administration is moving quickly with its mass deportation plans by sending some migrants to Guantanamo Bay in Cuba and rapidly deporting others. VOA's immigration Alain Barros brings us the story.
On his first day in office, U.S. President Donald Trump declared illegal immigration a national emergency. He promised to follow up on a key campaign promise and deport millions of undocumented immigrants. Lawyers say migrants facing deportation are entitled to due process. Here's Hannah Flam. She is an immigration lawyer and director of policy at the International Refugee Assistance Project.
You are issued a charging document, which begins a proceeding against you when you can apply for asylum or otherwise defend your right to be in the United States. At the end of that process of applying for immigration relief, of going to immigration court and seeing an immigration judge, if you don't win at the end of that process, then you are issued a deportation order.
Flam says deportation can happen quickly or it can take a long time.
It's possible that somebody is deported after months or years of fighting their case. It's also possible that somebody is deported after hours or days of seeking entry to the United States or having lived here for many years, within hours or days of being taken into custody under Trump's latest policy.
Since January 21st, federal authorities have arrested over 8,200 people and requested help from other enforcement agencies. The administration has also expanded the use of fast-track deportation, which allows immigration officers to remove undocumented migrants without a court hearing. Here's Tom Homan. He is Trump's border czar.
We got to do more. And that's what we're looking at now. We're looking at ways to create more efficiencies to do more.
The administration is using a military base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to detain certain undocumented migrants. Here's Tom Homan again.
That's going to be another place where we have up to 30,000 beds. And President Trump made a commitment that the worst of the worst will go to get more.
But legal challenges have already begun. A federal judge in New Mexico recently blocked the transfer of three Venezuelan immigrants to Guantanamo. And advocates have sued the Trump administration for holding detainees at Guantanamo without access to lawyers or family. Here's Hannah Flam again.
This is the first time in U.S. history that the U.S. government has detained people on U.S. soil and transported them to Guantanamo.
A DHS official told VOA that Guantanamo Bay is currently holding individuals with final deportation orders, including violent criminals. While legal challenges are ongoing, the administration continues to enforce deportation measures. Aline Barros, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Some 260 people believed to have been trafficked and trapped into working in online scam centers are to be repatriated after they were rescued from Myanmar. Thailand's army announced Thursday. They represented 20 nationalities, including seven African countries: Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Burundi, Tanzania, Nigeria, and Ghana. Myanmar, Cambodia, and Laos have become known as havens for criminal syndicates that are estimated to have forced hundreds of thousands of people into helping run online scams, including false romantic ploys, bogus investment pitches, and illegal gambling schemes. United Nations experts say such scams have extracted tens of billions of dollars from victims around the world. In the U.S., the month of February designated as Black History Month, a time to celebrate Black history, culture, and education. Black history is also celebrated within communities and families, where according to studies, some families use the month to explore their genealogy and learn about their ancestors. For more on the significance of Black History Month, VOA's Douglas Ipuga reached out to Dr. Nola Haynes, an academic, policy writer, and advocate.
I think this is one of the most important Black History Months in the history of the country because Black folks have never felt so vulnerable since the passing of the Civil Rights Package. And since there is an attempt to kind of ease back on celebrating or, you know, promoting Black people, especially within the federal government, which is one of the largest employers of Black Americans, this particular Black History Month has more meaning because it's more community-driven, it's more family-driven, and people feel closer to the heritage, to the legacy, because people really do feel like we are going back to a time where it just wasn't fair and equal in our country.
This year's theme is African Americans and labor. What do you make of that theme?
It's incredibly important. The federal government is one of the largest employers for Black Americans, for African Americans. So a lot of people are very nervous about next steps, what they're going to do. There is an old adage in the Black community. There's an old joke that says you go to college, or maybe you don't go to college, and then you get your good government paying job that you have stability for 30 years and then you retire. So right now, Black History Month means even more because Black Americans, African Americans feel that their stability is being threatened because it's tied in with labor. So again, this has more cultural meaning this month, this year.
Lastly, do you think Black history, especially what Blacks have contributed to America's historical narrative, is well taught or explained to more people?
You know, there's been an attempt, you know, in this country for a lot of years to educate all Americans on Black history and beyond Dr. Martin Luther King, although his contributions were still great, you know, and also President Lincoln. But Frederick Douglass was one of those key prominent figures early on in this movement. Even in the world that I'm in foreign policy, you know, when you think about Ralph Bunche, there's so many people, Ida B. Wells, there's so many Black Americans that has contributed to American culture, from music to art to food to architecture to innovation to developing technologies. The presence of Black Americans in this country has made it what it is. I live in Washington, D.C. now, and many ancestors physically built Washington, D.C. You know, so everywhere you go in this country, you are going to see why it is important to celebrate Black Americans in this country. And some people will say, well, why do only Black people need a month? I'm going to tell you why. The moment that we're in right now, where it feels like anything regarding Blackness is being attacked, is why Black History Month happened in the first place. Black history was not being taught at all in any institutions unless you were concentrated in Black areas. And even then, not so much, because many of the teachers were white.
That's Dr. Nola Haynes, an academic, policy writer, and advocate. She spoke with VOA's Douglas Ipuga from Washington, D.C. Today is Valentine's Day, a day people in many countries celebrate love. In Abuja, Nigeria, some people tell VOA that the rising cost of living will affect celebrations this year. Uchi Ibi thinks many people will spend less this year.
Of course, it will affect how people celebrate. St. Valentine is just second to what people are looking for to sustain them. The money people have are barely enough for them. So people are cutting down costs for frivolities. Consider Valentine as something that you can do without and you will still be okay. It's just a matter of understanding with your girlfriend or your spouse.
Bella Ojo also expects to see less spending.
The cost of living will affect this year Valentine's celebration because everything is skyrocketing. Transportation, foodstuffs, everything. Some families might like to go to an eatery to eat, but due to the cost of food, they might stay back at home and eat their food. Lovers might not be able to give themselves gifts.
John Garba looked for less expensive alternatives for his gift this year.
Usually, every year, I tend to buy very quality gifts, something very unique in my own standard, and something that is affordable. And the cost of living has even affected the basic needs, even as simple as food packages. I had to go for the bare minimum by looking for someone to kind of arrange different food items into a package for me, because prices of things in the ones I want that I saw online by Valentine vendors is ridiculous.
But Sophia James says she doesn't worry about the cost as she marks the day.
The rising cost of living might not really affect how I celebrate my Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day is a day set out to celebrate our loved ones. I think no matter what, you just show your loved ones how much they mean to you or how blessed you are to have them in your life. It's a season of love, so we have to spread love.
To everyone who celebrates, we wish you a happy Valentine's Day. Time now for our sports roundup. We have our VOA sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yeheyes.
So in Major League Soccer news, Temps, the Grammy Award-winning Nigerian singer, has become part owner of the San Diego Football Club. How big is that move for her?
That is a huge move for her, not only for her, but for all African artists and talent. It really showcases the connectivity between sports and music. She said through her social media post, quote, "I've always been a fan of sports, and to be very honest, music and sports, they're kind of similar in a way that they give opportunities to the young talents and the young generations coming up." That's exactly how she feels, and it's amazing to see that she's taking this step into becoming one of the part owners of a club, of a football club in San Diego. Also showing the interest between an African artist into the MLS, right? The MLS is a league that's continually growing while having Messi join about a year and some change ago. Now seeing the investment from not only her, in her group of owners, Issa Rae actually is a part of that owner's club as well. So it's amazing to see Black women joining the ranks of ownership in sports.
And sticking with world football, the Champions League matches that have happened midweek were fantastic. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, if anybody was watching any of the Champions League games, the first one that comes to mind is Real Madrid versus Man City. These are two powerhouses. Man City really has been on a slide and a decline this year. Real Madrid really has been trying to find their footing, and have recently, as of late, last 2 months or so, Kylian Mbappe really looks like he's been in form. And Man City was just trying to make a statement playing the first leg at home. They went up 2-1 in the lead against Real Madrid. Real Madrid was able to tie the game 2-2. In extra time, they were able to overtake them with Jude Bellingham scoring a tap-in with about a minute left in the game. Really, really shocking loss for Man City. They haven't been able to close out matches lately, and it's been really, really hard for not only them, but for their manager, Pep Guardiola.
And lastly, from football to basketball, how did the Luka Doncic and Anthony Davis trades work out for their new teams?
Let's just say Hollywood and LA are really ecstatic to have Luka Doncic, the new face of the LA Lakers. And as soon as the king, LeBron, decides to hand his torch over to Luka, I think this will be Luka's team. Very opportune moment for Luka to not only take over the team, but take over NBA in general. LeBron's playing fantastic. The game has looked really easy for him because he has another pass first type of guard. Anthony Davis, unfortunately, after the first game, got injured. So,
our sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer and sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.